This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Live from the Investors Bank Studio, Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti, Boomer and Gio on the Fan, and simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. Good Thursday morning, just a day away from the fourth annual Mikey Strong charity hockey game. We'll talk plenty about that as the show goes on. But we got Matt Harvey back. We got a good look at that Yankees lineup. We got the Jets and the Giants talking about stuff. It's a jam-packed Thursday, Boomer, and I know you were up until all hours of the night watching an overtime game that didn't mean anything. Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. You know, Henrik had to stop 50 shots of 55 shots coming his way. They did win, and it's kind of interesting. You're sitting there rooting for him, but you want him to lose because you want to get into that lottery to get that top pick out of Sweden, Rasmus Dahlin. But other than that,
Rasmus,
that's right. The new guys are doing well. So Namestnikov had a goal last night, and Spooner had three assists. Other than that, I sent you guys a text yesterday.
Yep.
After the Harvey performance for the Mets, and he topped out at 96 miles an hour, which is good. That's a great thing. So his reboot has started. It is now in full swing.
Positive first outing?
For the most part. You know, he did give up two hits yesterday in two innings. I mean, you know, he had two Ks. But I cut and pasted a piece of an article that was on the Post website. So, and I sent it to you guys. And I said, man, it's becoming like a Hemingway moment for Mickey Callaway. When you think about how these things are written and described in the newspaper.
Yep.
And here's what I sent you guys. Upon striking out Freddie Freeman to end the first inning, in which he had a pair of punch-outs, Harvey pointed at catcher Jose Lobaton and was greeted in the dugout by manager Mickey Callaway, who put his arm around the pitcher and showed appreciation with a pat on the fanny.
Oh, pat on the fanny!
This is what they're writing. I mean, you got to be kidding
All right.
me. All right. Are we men here? Are we out there competing? What the hell are we doing? What are we coming into? I mean, is everybody trying to be in touch with their feelings? I mean, I get it. I understand all that stuff. But when you go to work, you put a uniform on, you go to work, man.
No.
And it's not about hugging and patting on fannies and describing the emotional moment between manager and pitcher. My God, make me throw up. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, I think it's a little role reversal here between me and you, because usually I'm the guy who's getting way worked up and you're like piped down about it. I'll tell you why I think that this might not be that big of a deal. I think that people are putting that in because of the Mickey Callaway press conference.
It's so ridiculous.
Because he said he's going to love everybody more than all the players that have been loved in their lives and all that crap that you couldn't stand. So I think that they put that in there because everybody believes Callaway is like this lover. But I mean, if think about it. How many times have you seen a manager give a guy a little pat on the fanny?
I'm not disgusted with the fact that Callaway and Harvey would have that moment. I'm just disgusted that they would write about it the way they're writing about it.
Well,
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, a coach, of course, is going to be, hey, way to go, high five, whatever. You're going to be happy for
slap
the guy.
Slap on the butt.
Especially with what has happened to Matt Harvey over the last 2 years.
Sure.
So I think it's been a long time coming to have a little bit of success. And it was only two innings, by the way. And he did give up two hits. And he did give up a run.
But we talked about how this was important for him,
But he topped out at 96. That's the key thing, that some of the velocity is there. It's back. How long it will stay and how consistent he'll be with it, who knows? I guess this is what spring training is there to support and to build up the arm strength and all that other stuff. But I just, the way they're writing it.
No,
just
I know.
Like,
man. It's Mickey Callaway's fault that they're writing that because of what he said in that opening press conference.
Okay, all right.
It is.
So for me as a Met fan, watching some of the stuff this morning and watching what he was doing, that's good.
Very positive.
That is a very good start. If I'm going to sit here and I'm going to tell you that Steven Matz had a horrendous start to his spring, Matt Harvey had a B start. It wasn't an A-plus start or an A start or a B-plus. It was a B start. It was good. He hit 96. He was around the plate. He felt, and he even said after the game, felt really good. So all those things are very positive. That's what I take out of it.
Yeah.
Forget about the hugging and the pat on the fanny and the way we're going to describe it in the paper. But I will say, for me, it was very encouraging. Okay?
Yeah, I told Chernoff he needs to do more of that. You know, like after a good segment, if we go out into the newsroom and he's there, a little pat on the fanny, a little hug. He wasn't really into it, though.
He said he was afraid of harassment. I don't know what you guys are doing. I don't care. Just do it well. And that's all I'm going to give you is I'm going to give you a little verbal support.
Right.
And that's about it.
Wouldn't that be nice, though? A nice segment. You walk out, you want to stretch your legs, and there's Chernoff there patting you on the butt.
No, I don't.
I told myself,
you come near me and you want to hug me, I'll break your ribs again. Actually, I think I've broken his ribs.
For the fourth time?
Yeah, three times. I actually have. So you weren't around back in, I think it was 93 or 4.
Right.
I decided to pick the little guy up.
And then he's made out of balsa wood.
And I didn't even realize. When I picked him up, I mean, I really felt like I was cracking.
Yeah.
Like a glass shattered in my arms.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, are you all right?
Yeah.
I thought, you know, like when you pick somebody up and you crack their back.
Yeah.
It felt like that, like times 10.
Oh, man. And he really snapped a rib.
I think he really snapped a rib. He did. And I felt so bad. I was like.
You felt so bad you did it two more times.
Yeah. Well. All right. So anyway, Matt Harvey, pretty good. And then you have Russell Wilson talking to Clint Frazier about how to deal with a concussion by drinking more water.
Well, he's one of these crazy hydration guys, right? Like Tom Brady, which is a good thing.
Well, crazy hydration guys that have been very successful.
I know. I'm just saying. Well, Russell Wilson's got his own water, his special, like, magic water that he's been pimping.
Wow, there you go. That's why.
Let me see if I can find exactly what that is, the Russell Wilson magic water.
I mean, but it was interesting that he would just say, hey, look, man, you know, you want to overcome this concussion, you got to drink a lot of water.
Yeah, here it is. I mean, this was back in all the way in 2015, Russell Wilson claims he healed a concussion with miracle water.
What's the miracle water? What is it?
The miracle water is
get some of that Voss water, man. That's some serious Norwegian miracle water.
It's his recovery water. So that's what he said. And then he also said, I believe at recovery water helped prevent me from getting a concussion on a bad hit. # nanobubbles.
Hmm.
It's got the nano bubbles in there. So that's what he's trying to do. See, Russell Wilson, he doesn't just go to Yankee camp. He goes to Yankee camp, tries to sell his recovery water. That's what he does, a businessman. Hey, Clint, check out my nano bubbles over here. You think you got a concussion? You'll be fine. We need Russell Wilson in Mets camp. That's where we need Russell Wilson. Maybe he could start massaging out a hamstring, checking out that plantar fasciitis, pouring some of that nano water on Jay Bruce's foot and Yoenis Cespedes' shoulder, Jacob deGrom's back, and then maybe we might have something.
I'll tell you one thing. If either one of these teams could get him as a quarterback, that would be great.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have Dave Gettleman coming out and say, of course, we're open for business. We're still evaluating. We're in the midst of all this stuff. So all the stuff he says is logical. You know, and then there's this story that, you know, Davis Webb will be the key, will hold a key to the number two overall pick for the New York Giants as to whether or not they trade it, they select a running back, they select a defensive player, or they go quarterback. And I'm telling you, they need to go quarterback 100%. I'm 100% convinced.
They're
on
starting
it.
To scare me, man.
And the only reason I say that is because, you know, I have no idea what to expect for Davis Webb. And if you have two really good players at that position, then that's a really good problem to have.
Yeah, and Al and I were talking this morning. Isn't this like reopening the wound of how stupid that whole thing was at the end of the season where Davis Webb didn't find his way onto the field?
Yeah, but, you know, Gettleman and this coaching staff obviously had nothing to do with that.
No,
so.
I know, but I'm not blaming them at all. I'm just saying it's just so stupid because Pat Shermer's talking about, oh yeah, I went back and watched him in college, Davis Webb. I watched his practice tape, but you know, we really don't have any NFL football on him. When you had a chance to have NFL football on him last year, but they botched this whole thing. So it just stinks for the new regime that when they're trying to evaluate this quarterback going into this draft where they've got the second overall pick that they don't have tape on this guy when they should have had tape on this guy.
Well, they should have real football tape
exactly.
on this guy. And I think it's really unfair to ask Pat Shermer and Dave Gettleman to try to figure out now whether or not he's the guy. And, you know, the other thing, too, is that you have the people that are still left in the building
mm-hmm.
that know who Davis Webb is, and they know they've watched him practice. I'm sure John Mara has seen him. I'm sure they like him. But at the end of the day, you know, you are at a spot right now where there's going to potentially be somebody that could be your quarterback for the next 12 to 14 years there. And I don't – you know, we could sit here and go round and round and round and round about this whole thing. This is the NFL, and you got to have that position. And the Giants have had that position for 14 years. And it's been one of the reasons why they have been competitive. So I would say, you know what? We can't get enough of them. It's like, you know, it's like point guards in basketball. It's like what the Knicks are going through with Moutier and Neal Akina right now and Trey Burke. They all got to play. You all got to see them play. They all should play something. They should be playing together. You got to figure out whether or not these guys are the answer moving forward, because if they're not, then you're going to have to go draft one again.
Yeah, I think that these quotes about Davis Webb, I don't think you get too scared if you're a Giants fan who wants a quarterback. I think they're just saying nice things, because what else are they going to say about Davis Webb? I mean, maybe they could say something that would almost make you think it was a guarantee they would take a quarterback, something along the lines of, oh, we see Davis Webb as a backup or a third stringer down the road, but they're not going to say that. It's just not something that they're going to say. So there was a couple Giants fans yesterday I was talking to, and a couple that tweeted me that said, oh, no, they're not going to take a quarterback at two.
They will.
I still think they're going to. I mean, because it's a – listen, Dave Gettleman understands. The Giants understand.
Sure they do.
John Mara, you got to trust these guys. They know that this is a unique opportunity. I wouldn't freak out. It scared me a little bit with the love for Davis Webb, but I wouldn't totally freak out. I still think at this point that's a situation they're going to go into. And then you got the Jets, who, of course, are going to be attached to Kirk Cousins every single day until he signs with somebody.
Well, especially with Matt Forte retiring and Mo Wilkerson getting cut, so
now you got the 90
even
million
more money, even more money is available.
Right,
so they're in a different position, because this coach and this general manager has got to start winning. You can't go into a fourth year and not making the playoffs. And the only way they're going to do that is if they get a veteran quarterback of the stature of Kirk Cousins. I'm not endorsing that, in a sense that, other than trying to explain why the Jets would be all in on Kirk Cousins. I'm just trying to explain. I know you're against all this. As much as I would love for them to get Baker Mayfield, and I would love to see Baker Mayfield sitting there at number six, and you know, the Jets losing out on Kirk Cousins and then taking him, because I think that's the only way that would happen. It would be foolish for them not to go after Kirk Cousins. It would just be foolish. They have to.
Yeah, and the Jets right now, I mean, listen to these negative stories. And you open up the paper, you get to the section on the Jets, you're talking about Mo Wilkerson, who was a massive bust after you gave him the money, discipline problems, he was late to meetings.
Yep.
And then you got another section here talking about these arrests that you have that are not just like a disorderly conduct arrest. We're talking about driving drunk the wrong way in the Lincoln Tunnel, and you got the Jets saying, well, we need to gather some information on that. It just happened the other day with Dylan Donahue. What other information do you need other than a guy was drunk driving the wrong way in a Lincoln Tunnel? And then the Robbie Anderson thing on top of that, and Todd Bowles is saying they're bumps in the road? You know what? If you want to be taken seriously and this regime is going to take a turn, get rid of those guys immediately. Now, I know Anderson's a tougher cut than Dylan Donahue is, but get rid of them. And they're saying that, oh, this was purely a business decision with Wilkerson. It's not purely a business decision, because if this guy was earning that contract, you would have kept him. But he wasn't taking stuff seriously. He was showing up late, so you got rid of him. Get rid of these guys, too, because they're embarrassing to your organization. And this is why there's a perception around the Jets that is that Todd Bowles doesn't have control of that locker room.
Well, it's not that he doesn't have control of the locker room, because you can't control guys when they decide to make decisions on their own away from the locker room.
But how about Wilkerson?
So, I know that, but here's the deal. Well, that goes back to the whole Sheldon Richardson and Wilkerson and all that other stuff. But by that time, they had already been committed to Wilkerson with the guaranteed money. That's why they had to keep him, and that's why they moved Sheldon Richardson. They get rid of Wilkerson now, and they save money. Forte retires, they save money. This other stuff away from the team, on personal time by these guys, that's frightening, because that's part of the investigation that you do now at the combine about who these guys are, what their problems have been, what happened to their in their previous life at their colleges. And Robbie Anderson had red flags all over the place. So they knew that they were taking a chance on him. You know, the Cincinnati Bengals do that every single year. They take a guy or two guys.
Yeah, Joe Mixon last year.
Well, how about Vontaze Burfict? Yeah. Nobody wanted him. Who signed him? The Bengals signed him.
Mm-hmm.
And what did they get? They've gotten everything that you expected you would get out of him. You'd get a really good football player that was unhinged. And that unhinging of a character basically has cost them ball games.
Oh, sure.
And probably has, in some way, shape, or form, unnerved the locker room without even the guys understanding how it works, how the negativity works within the locker room. Because the players probably like him, you know, but they don't understand what his What the pressure he puts on the coaching staff, on the ownership, you know, how the fans perceive him, how he plays in a game, the stupid things that he does off the field, things of that nature do have a paramount effect, I believe, on the entire team.
Yeah.
So that's why I think the Jets have really made, in my eyes, a very big mistake by not getting rid of these two players.
And what are they waiting for?
They actually got three players that have been in trouble.
But what are they, honestly, can you tell me what they're waiting for?
I mean, if I were Mike Maccagnan and I woke up and I had a player of mine driving a car the wrong way in the Lincoln Tunnel, causing an accident, if in fact everything that we are reading is factual and it is accurate,
yeah,
guess what? Goodbye.
Right, and this is not exactly a your starting quarterback either.
It's Chris Johnson, the owner.
Well,
it's
yeah.
I don't care. You know, it's like after a while, you have to take a stand and say enough is enough.
This is what I'm saying, and this is why the perception is that the Jets don't take these things seriously.
Given Robbie Anderson's background and all the crap that's gone on with him,
get out.
I would have said goodbye.
Nice year last year. Great. That's fine. You know,
become somebody else's problems.
Get out of here.
And other teams have done this in the last 2 years because of the sensitivity of the off-field problems that the NFL has had in recent years. So they have responded to things like that. And normally I would say, look, a guy is late to a meeting, a guy has a problem here or something. You can work with those things.
Yeah.
But when you're drunk driving, you're driving at 110 miles an hour and you're being
belligerent to
the cops and all that stuff, this is like, you know, this is like antisocial behavior. This is like the wrong thing.
Well, think about it too. If you're going on a free agent visit and you're looking into the news around an organization, if you're Kirk Cousins trying to figure things out,
they don't care. They don't care.
I mean, all right, this guy's showing up late to meetings. You got eight guys who are getting arrested. I mean, it's not a good look for the organization.
No,
I'm sorry,
it's not.
It's just not.
And somebody's got to put their foot down. You know, the thing is that, and Bill Cowher said this all the time. He goes, it's not your right to play in the NFL. It's a privilege to play in the NFL, and you earn it. You know, that's the way the old school guys think. That's the way I think. You know, you have to go out there. You got to put that jersey on. You have to earn that jersey. And not to say you can't have fun away from the game. You can't enjoy yourself by going to a birthday party. When I say birthday party, like in the city of Ten Oak or whatever, you know, with the NBA players and what have you.
Like a pinata and a cake in the backyard.
Have a good time and all that other stuff.
Right.
But, you know, you got to be smart. This is why the NFL offers free Uber cars. This is why the NFL goes in there and tells these guys, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't go get behind the wheel drunk and all this other stuff. And yet these guys still do it, and they still now and right now these guys have not paid the ultimate price, and that is by losing their jobs.
Right. It annoys me when you look at the quotes here saying that, oh, with Wilkerson, this wasn't a discipline issue, this was a business decision. I want to say, yeah, it was a damn discipline issue. This is garbage. You don't show up late. You don't act like you don't care. And those are the players we do not want in here. And I also don't want to hear these are bumps in the road with the arrest. We have to gather
bumps
more information.
Bumps in the road.
I mean, come on. And we got to gather more information. Just swiftly deal with this like an organization that's serious about cleaning up some of this garbage. And they don't do that. And that, to me, would annoy me, especially when you're coaching for your job again next year. I mean, that stuff, you could talk about the in-game decisions with Bowles, whatever. It's the stuff like this that really makes me question, you know, what type of leader he is and what type of atmosphere
but is
there.
This is also Mike Maccagnan. We should get Mike on and ask him, you know, oh, well, we like Robbie.
Yeah,
I like
the Lincoln
one.
Tunnel.
We like that one and everything else. But at the end of the day, you know what? It does send a message. If you start cutting guys in situations like this, it does send a message. You know, hey, when I'm out, I'm going to be smart. I'm not going to be driving. I'm going to get a car service to bring me home. I mean, that's really what you're trying to get across to everybody.
Yeah,
just the football team, but to everybody.
If Dave Gettleman took over the Jets and not the Giants, what do you think he'd do with these guys?
I would like to think that he would actually take, you know, take action and cut them.
That's what I think he would probably do. Honestly, he would probably say, are you kidding me? I mean, with this organization here, we're going to be tolerating stuff like this? This is not an information gathering thing. This isn't like a, you know, there's a couple stories out there of what happened. When you're driving the wrong way in the Lincoln Tunnel, you're driving the wrong way in the Lincoln Tunnel.
You know, you
there's
and
no
I,
two sides of that story.
You and I live in Long Island, and it's a big problem we have. We have a number of drunk drivers going the wrong way on any one of these parkways, any one of these on the expressway.
Happened on Sunrise Highway.
It
terrible Sunrise accident.
It's just awful.
Yeah.
It's awful.
It really is.
And here we go. We got an NFL player going the wrong way in the Lincoln Tunnel.
I mean, it's just, and it's now, a member of the Jets who still has not been released.
Especially I don't know what the blood alcohol level is or what the actual situation the facts of the whole situation, but it does not look good right now.
No, it doesn't. It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.